Call House Judiciary together at 7 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock on April 1st. What we have before us today is just testimony on HB 173. It was introduced last time, and we will get a continuation of the testimony today. And like I asked again, repeat to the committee, if you have any amendments you're working on HB 173, please have them to us by no later than noon tomorrow. And you'll see a couple on your desk. Representative Grunberg was very helpful in providing us the concept. He's going to have them drafted up and more in legal format, you know, and we'll have those for the next meeting. Representative Grunberg?
I take it we won't get to the other bill today.
The
voting bill?
The HB 3?
Yeah.
I feel really bad because I see folks here to testify in HB 3. I would like to get to HB 3, but I can't promise. We'll try our best to get to HB 3. It depends on how much testimony and discussion is on the first bill, HB 173. It's my intent to get to HB 3 and take your testimony. You took the time to come, and I respect and appreciate that, and I apologize for the wait that you'll have to do. So, but Representative Grunberg.
One other thing, I do apologize, particularly to Representative Ledoux. I received this afternoon this legal memo from Jean Michel. When I went up to your office, I hadn't read it. I still haven't read it, but I wanted to be sure everybody's got this so that when we take up the bill on the merits, House Bill 173, we'll have this. And Ms. Michel will be prepared to testify whenever you wish.
Thank you. And then on HB 140, that's a bill we had scheduled last week, and we had hopes of getting to it also. Things stacking up on us a little bit. We do not have a CS, so that means we will not be hearing it today or Wednesday. We'll see how it goes for the rest of it on Friday, and we'll give you plenty of notice on that. So with that, we're going to go right to testimony, public testimony on HB 170, unless there's other comments by the committee. Seeing none. I see something on the overhead, and
I can't read it.
We may have to turn off the lights to get there, but so with that, I guess I do not have a. Did you sign up to testify?
I did not.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Jen Allen and Laura Einstein.
Okay.
They're by telephone from Seattle. This lady will be operating the machine.
I got you.
Now she's doing their visual stuff, okay. And they'll be testifying.
Well, then I'll just quit trying to second guess everything. I'll start through my list, and we'll see where we end up. So we're going to start then with Laura Einstein. Are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. I believe that I'm co-testifying with Jennifer Allen, however, and I think we had thought she might start presenting the issues we wanted to discuss today.
Jennifer Allen, are you online?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If you would, if you have a presentation for us, that's fine. When you talk, identify who you are and who you represent, and we have an overhead here in front of us that's been provided, and go right ahead.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Jennifer Allen, and I am the Director of Public Policy for Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest. And with me here today to co-present this PowerPoint is Laura Einstein, who is Chief Legal Counsel for Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest, and we also want to say thanks to Allison Curry, who's there in the room operating our slides. We appreciate the chance to speak to you today and are here to respectfully request that you oppose House Bill 173 to protect the freedom and privacy of all Alaska women, no matter their income, to make their own pregnancy decisions in consultation with their doctor. I want to tell you just a little bit about why we are uniquely qualified to speak to this bill. We at Planned Parenthood are a healthcare provider whose mission is to ensure access to high-quality reproductive health care. At our five health centers in Alaska, the majority of the over 7,000 Alaskans that we saw in 2011 were low-income people. The vast majority of our services focus on prevention, including cancer screenings, birth control, and screening for sexually transmitted infections, including HIV. We are committed to providing these preventative services to support women and men in planning and spacing their pregnancies. And when a woman makes the very personal and often complex decision to end a pregnancy, we are a provider of safe and legal abortion services as well. I'd like to make a note about that. Much has been made, I think, about the fact that in a hearing on the Senate version of this bill, Laura testified that we couldn't say what an elective abortion is. In fact, we can't say that because an elective abortion is a term that we would never use at Planned Parenthood. It's a term that's been imbued with a great deal of judgment and is typically used to demean and shame women who make the decision to end their pregnancies. Instead, we would use the term medically necessary or not medically necessary. And the truth is that we would have a hard time giving you a definition of that either, because neither Laura or I is a doctor. And that speaks specifically to the reason why we oppose House Bill 173. No one can make the call about what's medically necessary for an individual woman with a unique set of health circumstances except a doctor, a trained physician, in consultation with the woman and taking into account her unique health history. Also, the other reason I want to say that we are uniquely qualified to talk about this bill is that we worked extensively with the Department of Health and Social Services on the new regulation they just established to add a layer of extra certification to ensure that Medicaid abortions in Alaska are medically necessary abortions. We don't love that new regulation, but it does appear constitutional, and it's not clear to us why that new regulation is not being allowed to work.
Jennifer, can I? Is it okay if we ask questions in the middle, or would you rather wait until you're done?
That is certainly up to you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to take a question.
Okay, good. Representative Ledoux has a question. I have a question.
I actually got a couple of questions. First of all, do you view all abortions as medically necessary?
Honestly, Representative Ledoux, I appreciate that question, but I couldn't answer it because I'm not a doctor. What I know is that there haven't been any instances that we've heard of where anyone has submitted a request for payment for public funding for abortion with the medically necessary certification that's made by a doctor where that there's been any reason to suspect that that determination of medical necessity was inappropriate.
And then I've got one. Representative Keller, may I ask another question?
Yeah, please go ahead and dialogue, Representative Ledoux, and then we'll...
What does Planned Parenthood do if somebody walks into the clinic and says, you know, I'd like an abortion. I'm not eligible for Medicaid because maybe I've got some assets or something like that. But will you work with me? Will you let me put a small down payment and then we could do a monthly payment or something like that? Will Planned Parenthood work with people?
I know that we are able to work with some people, but I'm not sure what we would do in the specific situation you described. And Laura may be able to answer that. I'm not sure. Laura?
Is Laura here?
Yes, hello.
Laura, you need to give your name, please, and who you identify. Thank you.
Sure. Laura Einstein, Chief Legal Counsel at Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest, which is the Planned Parenthood that's located in Alaska. The answer to that question is it is possible, but generally patients pay the full amount of the procedure when they come to the health center.
I have a question, and then Representative Grunberg has a question. I think this may be another version of the same question that Representative Ledoux asked, but I think I heard you say, Jennifer, that you don't use the term elective abortion, and that you rather stick with not medically necessary or medically necessary. And my question would be, is there, can you give me any idea what you mean between the difference between an elective abortion and one you would call, I guess, not medically necessary? I think you said you don't define that then, the, you know, what's not medically necessary. I'm just a little confused, the terminology thing here. That
sure, thank you. To clarify, what I was trying to say is that we don't use the term elective abortion because it tends to be a value-laden term, and instead the terms that we would use would be medically necessary or not medically necessary.
Okay, then my question is, tell me the difference between not medically necessary and elective, please.
And respectfully, what I need to say to that is that I can't answer that question because I'm not a physician. I think that physicians are asked to answer that question each time that they consult with a patient who is seeking public funding for abortion. And as far as we know, there has never been a situation in which a patient with the doctor's certification of medical necessity, there's never been a case where there's been any question from the department or from anywhere as to whether there really was medical necessity. Each woman's situation and each woman's health is unique, and so that decision really does need to be made on an individual basis in consultation with a trained physician. Respectfully, making that decision by a list in a bill is just never going to be an effective way to take care of women's health.
And I assume you are aware that the term comes from the 2001 Planned Parenthood case in the Supreme Court decision. Representative Ledoux has a comment here on point, and then Representative Gruberg.
So I guess I'm just curious, since Planned Parenthood is testifying today, does Planned Parenthood have a physician who's going to testify on its behalf as to what a physician would consider medically necessary or medically unnecessary?
Did you mean
physician here today? And honestly, we would not have a physician wouldn't be able to answer that unless the physician was talking about an individual patient's case based on that individual patient's unique healthcare history.
Okay, so it can't be done. But I'm going to have to apologize here when you speak, because there's two of you that are responding. You need to tell me each time who's talking. Otherwise, our recorder just has a terrible time. So who is that? Was that Jennifer?
Oh, thank you, Miss. Yes, that was Jennifer Allen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer. Representative Gruenberg has been waiting, but Representative Ledoux wanted to follow up.
Yes. Is abortion the only thing in the medical world where nobody can seem to define without a specific patient what's medically necessary? I mean, I can understand that there may be specific instances that it might be difficult to determine without a patient in front of you what's medically necessary, what's not medically necessary. But kind of in general parameters, couldn't you say that if a woman walked into an office and said, hey, I'm pregnant, I don't know who the father is, and I don't want this baby, that wouldn't be medically necessary? I mean, do we need a physician to testify that that's not medical necessity?
Well, again, I don't think a physician could testify about that unless the physician then also took a health history from the woman. And what you're talking about is a perspective and a desire that had nothing to do with a woman's particular health necessarily. So a physician would talk to her about her particular health and then be able to determine if it was medically necessary. And in answer to the question about whether it's the only thing, I don't believe that it is. In fact, I think there are lots of things. Just yesterday, a friend of mine hit his hand really hard with a hammer and knocked off part of his thumb, and there was a great deal of question about whether or not it was medically necessary for him to go to the emergency room. And I think that talking to a consulting nurse in that case helped him determine what the medically necessary course of action was. I think that it's true all the time that people seek physicians' input as to whether or not something is medically necessary.
And I would assume this is Jennifer talking now?
Yes, I'm sorry again, Mr. Chair. Yes, that was Jennifer Allen.
Yeah, I'm Representative Grunberg has a question, and then I'm going to, after you can dialogue, feel free, but when you're done, if we can, we need to press on and give them the dignity to finish their presentation instead of asking the same question. So, Representative Grunberg.
How much does an abortion cost through you?
This is Jennifer, and I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that question. And I would ask Laura Einstein to answer if she knows.
I would ask if Ms. Einstein, can you answer the question?
That is a that I can.
This is Laura Einstein. I may have to submit the answer to that question after the hearing, and I'd be happy to do that. I think the issue is, what does Medicaid reimburse Planned Parenthood for an abortion? And obviously the Department of Health and Social Services has that information, but I'd be happy to provide that to the committee.
Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
That was not my question. My question was, what do you charge an individual, not Medicaid? I didn't ask what the Medicaid reimbursement was. I asked, what do you charge a person? And I'm interested, since you folks are in Seattle, somebody from your organization answer that question either during the hearing or as quickly thereafter in writing as possible, what it costs here in Alaska. Simple question, simple answer. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Jennifer, if you would continue. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, this is Jennifer again. I will try and be brief here and talk about the reasons why we ask you to oppose this bill. The first is that this bill puts women's health at risk. It can deter or delay women from seeking abortion care, which increases the chances of continuing a health-threatening pregnancy or pushing an abortion later into the pregnancy. Second, pregnancy decisions should be made by women and their doctors. We don't turn to government for advice about other kinds of medical care, but this bill puts politicians right in between women and their doctors. Doctors and not government are the right ones to decide medical necessity, as happens today. Third, the Supreme Court has already spoken on this issue. The Constitution requires that women's pregnancy decisions, whether to terminate or carry to term, are given equal protection under the law. This means that abortion services must be provided to low-income women so their pregnancy choices are not restricted by their economic status. In addition, the definition of medically necessary may not be further limited without discrimination against women who rely on government for health care. This really is a simple matter of fairness. Because of this Supreme Court decision, it is likely that this bill will become subject to litigation again if it passes. It is important to note that that carries a cost to the state as well. There's no evidence of the misapplication of the medical necessity standard today, and this bill really does appear to be a solution looking for a problem at a high cost to the Alaska budget. We would really urge that you not move this bill forward and appreciate the time to speak to you today. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Laura Einstein.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Hold on just a little bit, please. Representative Lynn, did you?
Yes, could you tell me, please, is medically necessary defined for other medical procedures other than abortion? For example, appendicitis, is that defined where medically necessary to remove the appendix or to do something else or for cancer or for any number of myriad of other types of ailments that all of us are subject to? Are the medically necessary definitions there before they can receive any kind of reimbursement from Medicare, et cetera, and Medicaid, I mean?
This is Laura Einstein, and you actually anticipated the very first point I was going to make, which is that the Medicaid rules in Alaska, as similar to throughout the country, state that medically necessary will be determined by a physician's standards of practice, and Medicaid trusts Alaska physicians to evaluate their patients' needs and provide appropriate care. So the specific answer to your question is, apart from physicians applying their own standards of practice, there are no definitions of medically necessary for things like an appendicitis, having your appendix removed, or for pregnancy, for that matter. And that's why this particular bill is such an outlier and focuses on abortion services in a way that Medicaid doesn't require for any other kinds of services. Does that answer your question?
To a degree, Mr. Chair. I know when I get some kind of medication, sometimes my insurance coverage covers it, sometimes it's not. Depends on what it is and how it's defined, whatever procedure I may have had or whatever medication I may have had. The insurance provider requires a definition of the procedure, and they decide if it's medically necessary or not.
Well, in some ways, that is, obviously insurance companies pay for certain medications and not others depending on formularies, but when an insurance company sometimes have different rules for when they need to approve something depending on the type of insurance you have. But when we're talking about Medicaid, we're simply talking about physicians in Alaska making a determination that certain health care is needed for a patient. And that's what the physicians who provide abortion services do as well. They sit down, they talk to a patient, they learn everything they can about her health care, about her health needs, and then they make a determination whether this procedure is medically necessary or not medically necessary.
If I could, the question that we have to deal with is whether or not the state is required to pay for elective abortions, and I think any reasonable reading of Planned Parenthood versus state of Alaska, I think it says over and over again that we are not talking here about elective abortions. So that's the that is the question. Thank you for bringing it up, put it on the table, and yes, we are having a discussion on the issue. I think Representative Grunberg, did you have a question that you wanted to ask? And then we'll go on to the next testifier. Otherwise, we may not make it out of here until 10 o'clock tonight. We wouldn't want that. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. First, folks, I don't mean to be critical in my questioning. I'm just trying to get some information. And all of my questions, the one on the cost of abortion and the next two I'm going to ask, are how much will first a vasectomy cost through your organization in Alaska? And second, let's go back to the previous slide if we could. How much Medicaid birth control, or, well, let's say I'm seeking non-Medicaid answers here. How much the birth control costs through your organization here in Alaska? And what I'm looking for is non-Medicaid paid in Anchorage currently for abortions, birth control, and vasectomies. And if you can't provide it, it's okay, but please get somebody from your organization to provide that, either later during the testimony today or in writing through the chair, to the, if that's okay, and then be distributed to members of the committee. Is there anybody that can answer that? Otherwise, just do it later.
Instead of polling the audience, if you would go through the chair.
Through the chair, maybe you could see if anybody's...
Not right now. We're going to go to Clover Simon, who give her a chance to testify. I thank you, Jennifer and Laura, and then we're going to go right down through our list, but I know... anyway, Clover, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Do you have testimony for us?
I do. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Clover Simon, and I'm testifying as a private citizen. I live in House District 23, and I'm here today to urge the committee to vote no on House Bill 173. Only health care providers can know what is medically necessary in pregnancy decisions should be left up to the woman with the consult of her doctor, not politicians. You've already heard some evidence that this bill is unconstitutional and that the Alaska Supreme Court has already made a determination about publicly funded abortion. This bill is about more than definitions. It is about a woman's life and the decisions that her family is faced with when they experience an unintended pregnancy. I do not believe it's okay to single out families who are poor. Everyone in Alaska is protected by the Constitution regardless of their socioeconomic position. Alaska continues to have higher than average rates of unintended pregnancy, disproportionately affecting low-income and minority women. Abortion, child abuse, and poor mother-child health outcomes are just a few of the symptoms of unintended pregnancy. It's time for us to take a proactive stance on reducing the rates of unintended pregnancy in Alaska. The secondary effect will be a reduction in abortion, healthier children, and most importantly, healthy women and healthier and a healthier Alaska. I think this is something that we can all stand behind. Currently, there are various grantees across the state who get nearly $2 million in federal family planning funding, and this helps avert thousands of unintended pregnancies. The legislature could take this one step further and obtain a family planning waiver through the Medicaid program, which has come to a 90-10 match and saves nearly $4 for every dollar spent in future Medicaid costs. This would cover women up to 175% of the federal poverty level, and it would fill in the gap of the women that probably won't be covered once the Affordable Care Act goes into effect. So I'm asking you today to have some vision for Alaska and our families. Think about a proactive strategy, and I thank you for your time and appreciate the work that you're doing every day for Alaskans. Please make it count.
Thank you, Clover. And if you would forward those comments to my office, I think you had them written. If you did, and we will distribute them. Representative Ledoux has a question for you.
Yes, Ms. Simon, sure. You said you were testifying as a private citizen. Are you no longer with Planned Parenthood or involved with Planned Parenthood?
No, I'm a full-time mom now.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to continue down the list, but before we do, I want to say for the record that we have a full contingency in the House Judiciary Committee today. Representative Millett's here, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Pruitt, Representative Foster, Representative Ledoux, and Representative Lynn, and myself, Representative Keller. I forgot to take roll. Can you tell? Dr. Ali Hoganson from Fairbanks, I believe.
Hello?
Hello. Dr. Hoganson, do you have testimony for us today? If you do, identify yourself and who you represent, and give us your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Ellie Hoganson. I am a general OBGYN in Fairbanks, actually born and raised in Fairbanks, and I'm testifying against this bill. My practice will be affected if this bill passes. I don't perform elective abortions, leaving aside the whole definition, 15 minutes of definition or whatever. But like many OBGYNs in Alaska, I do perform abortions for medical indications. I think this bill would create more bureaucracy within the state Medicaid program, be difficult to follow. It may prevent women with limited funds from accessing necessary medical care. I feel like the bill is too vague in a lot of ways to accomplish its goal, yet in some other ways it's kind of oddly specific. Why does it enumerate kind of dangerous medical conditions if Medicaid would allow others to be included? Of course, it's very similar to Bill 49, or Senate Bill 49. I'm a little naive regarding politics. I don't see why these are kind of going through at the same point, but regardless, the list of medical conditions feels quite arbitrary. There's listed seizures, convulsions, eclampsia, epilepsy, status epilepticus. They're all listed, but they could all be covered with the heading seizures. Pulmonary hypertension is listed as potential cause of worsening bodily function, but really the concern with that is it comes with a 40% chance of maternal death during the pregnancy or delivery, not with the disability. It's almost as if a medical professional wasn't really consulted in crafting the legislation. It seems like kind of a smattering. There's also many serious maternal cardiac and vascular conditions that can be fatal or dangerous that are not listed. As obstetricians, we spend 4 years in residency studying serious health conditions in pregnancy. That's kind of our deal. And I'm just not sure that a comprehensive list is possible to create. You kind of have to look at the patient in front of you and say, you know, how dangerous is this for her? And, you know, in consultation with her, she'll decide what to do.
there is an out. The bill states that other serious medical conditions would be covered, but serious isn't defined. And so, you know, is a 50% chance of fatality serious? Is a 10% chance? Is a 1% chance of maternal death or impairment serious? You know, if it was a 1% chance of a plane crashing, you know, most people wouldn't get on it. So I don't know. It's one of those things that kind of has to be looked at on an individual basis. I feel like this bill would kind of limit our ability to do that. Do I get to decide what is serious, or kind of who does? It also doesn't allow for abortion, even in cases where the fetus has no chance of survival, such as, you know, and these are not necessarily that uncommon, anencephaly or severe derangements of chromosomes. Most reasonable people would consider abortions in these situations also medically necessary because it saves the mom the risks of ongoing pregnancy, and of course a pregnancy is a high risk situation, and just, you know, it saves the further grief for the pregnancy and et cetera. These are always very traumatic for the mom and the couples involved. Medicaid already requires that the provider document the procedure was medically necessary. This is something we go through for it to be a covered service. I don't see that this bill would add much except confusion to this issue, so I encourage you to vote against this very poorly written, in my opinion, bill.
Thank you for your testimony, Doctor. I just want to clarify one thing. So you said you do not do elective abortions. Did I hear you say that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Pamela Samash, S-A-M-A-S-H.
Hello there. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we heard you. As a matter of fact, it turned out the speaker was really turned high. So, but we got you real loud and clear. If you would give us your name and who you represent.
Well, sorry about that. Hello there. My name is Pamela Samash, and I live here in Nemana. And I'm also president of Right to Life Interior. And I'm testifying today to please ask you to vote yes on this HB bill that you are listening to testimony about today. I totally agree with the bill, and I'd like to read this to you. This bill does not come between patients and their doctors and does not prevent or stop abortion. This bill is only to determine if taxpayers pay for them or not. This is very common with insurance companies who regularly pay for medical care. There needs to be specific codes, treatments, and diagnosis, etc. This is standard practice procedures for payment companies. There are specific reasons for medically necessary abortions. There is no reason to make this so mysterious or complicated. I did contact and found out for Mr. Gutten, or Representative Guttenberg, I didn't hear if they gave you a price. The abortion price is about $650 in Fairbanks. I feel that Planned Parenthood is considering socioeconomic reasons and labeling that medically necessary. But this is not the real a real medical reason. When I was a healthy 22-year-old, Planned Parenthood asked me about my marital status, my income, and then they proceeded to pressure me to have an abortion. And I've been in Planned Parenthood, I've seen how they proceed because it's a business and they need to make money. So I don't want to sit here and bash Planned Parenthood, but I'm just trying to say I think you're on the right track to go ahead and pursuing this bill, because you really do need to set some guidelines, in my opinion, based on my experience. So thank you very much.
Thank you for taking time to call and testifying, Pamela. I don't see any questions at this time. Lance Roberts, are you online?
Yes.
Thank you for taking time to testify. If you would get close to the mic, we could barely hear you. And if you would identify yourself and who you represent and give us your testimony.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so this is Lance Roberts, Fairbanks, Alaska. I would just like to ask you to support this bill. We definitely need good definitions. working with laws and legal bodies and other organizations, there's nothing worse than not having good definitions backing up your laws. It just leads to holes, it leads to problems not happening, to problems happening because of it. So please tighten things up. Supreme Court said we had to do medically necessary the way that we're doing Medicaid, but we definitely need a good definition. I think a great example is the testimony you just heard from this doctor here who said she doesn't do elective abortions. Then she talked about doing them for babies with chromosome deficiencies. So even though it's not a life issue, it isn't going to affect the life of the mother, she's stating that that's the kind of thing that should be allowed. So she would be allowing babies with Down syndromes to be murdered just because the mother would find it inconvenient. That is exactly why we need an exact definition of medically necessary so that our taxpayer dollars don't go paying for elective abortions that are only there for the convenience of the mother or other parties involved. So I hope that you guys will strive to put in a good definition, and I would encourage you to move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Lance. Appreciate you calling in. I don't see any questions at this time, so let's go to Jeffrey Mittman from the ACLU. He called, I know, Friday and patiently waited. And Jeff, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the Executive Director of the ACLU of Alaska, and as always, I thank the Judiciary Committee for the opportunity to testify, and I apologize for the miscommunication on Friday. I was able to listen into the hearing. Very briefly, the committee has a written testimony. I want to focus on two issues. One, as the committee, I believe, is aware, over the summer, the ACLU and Planned Parenthood were able to meet with the Department of Health and Social Services. We understood quite clearly the state's concern with regard to reimbursement and payment requirements with respect to abortion services and other services. We were able to very specifically coordinate with the Department of Health and Social Services and ensure that, where appropriate, the state was being reimbursed from the federal government, and otherwise that the information the Department of Health and Social Services needs to determine reimbursement is available. I believe that that determination with the Health and Social Services Department is the best indicator that Alaska has an appropriate policy in place. Secondarily, as the committee knows, what the ACLU focuses on is not policy review. When appropriate, we certainly share our opinion. What we focus more specifically on is our duty to do a constitutional and legal analysis. I think an important question that has come up in questioning from the committee and testimony as well is, what is this issue of quote-unquote medical necessity? I want to draw the committee's attention to pages 3 and 4 of our testimony because I believe this is most important.
Yeah, I do.
Most important for legal analysis. Based on our review, medical necessity and medically necessary are defined very many times in the Medicaid code for the state of Alaska. Nowhere else, however, is there a list that specifies what is included in that. Management of the Medicaid program has been very successful without the list. As you've heard from testimony from physicians, to try to more specifically specify a list legally interferes with the medical process. In looking at whether or not this bill is constitutional or appropriate, the courts would look to that standard. And we believe, as we have advised the committee, that the courts would find that based on that is unconstitutional. More importantly, again, for conserving states' resources, this is an issue that has been litigated and litigated and relitigated many times, and the Supreme Court has been clear. We're really going down a course that does not need to be gone down again, and simply entangling the state in a needless litigation that would not really improve either the financial picture or the medical picture. With that, I'm available to answer any questions, and again, I thank the committee for the opportunity to share our concerns.
Thank you for taking time to testify. Let's go to Ellen Morin.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
My name is Ilan Moran, and I am a lifetime Alaskan and currently live in Palmer. I thank you for the opportunity to address House Bill 173 because I find it most confusing that anything medically necessary is being defined by legislation and not by doctors or at least medical professionals. I have heard many eloquent speakers today against this bill with points of legal argument, and I wholeheartedly agree with all of them. But I wish to take this to a personal level because this is too important of a subject to be reduced to facts and figures. The restricting of abortions to poor women will only create the need for what is known as back alley abortions back in my day, when women and young unmarried girls had no other choice of a safe legal abortion. I am personally familiar with this subject because in 1969 I was raped and became pregnant, and my mother took me to one of these butchers. The whole experience was a nightmare, and I can honestly say it was the worst experience of my life, and I have a very unique scale as I am the woman who survived that awful machete killing spree 5 years ago. I can also speak to the subject of rape because in 1978, I was one of the founders of STAR, Standing Together Against Rape, and have seen many horrible abuses of women during my 5 years of employment. The defining of rape in this bill is vague at best and completely unrealistic. My rape was a date rape, and both then and now, almost impossible to prove. Women who are raped, and there are many of us, don't always want to go public with it. Telling anyone other than our doctor or counselor is gut-wrenching. My greatest fear, which is not another machete attack, but rather coat hangers, will once again be used by poor women to try and control the number of mouths they have to feed. Thank you for your time and attention. Are there any questions?
I don't see you at this time, Elan. Thank you for calling in. Pat Chambers?
Oh, hi, this is Pat Chambers. I am calling from Fairbanks, and I am calling to express my support of HB 173, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify it. And I want to let you know that our great state of Alaska should define what medically necessary is, especially when it involves killing the innocents. And our state have to, we cannot allow or promote this killing of the innocents for any reason, especially for personal convenience or for economic reasons. So I want to let you know that I support the House Bill 173 that will define medically necessary abortion. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you for taking time. Pat, to call in, much appreciated. Let's go to Susan Schrader. Are you in the room here? Let's go to the room here and take a few, and then we'll come back to the phones. There's quite a few left on the phones, but... Thanks for taking time out of your day to come and testify. If you would,
You're
give
welcome.
Us your name and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Keller and committee members. My name is Susan Schrader. I live in Juneau in House District 32. I'm here today to oppose House Bill 173 as it represents yet another attempt of politicians to intervene in the very personal decision that Alaskan women are faced with. These are decisions that should be left up to women in consultation with their families, their faith, and their physicians. I have high blood pressure, and you know, I've never yet called Representative Curtula to ask her how does she define hypertension and what should my treatment options be. My husband has survived cancer, and he did not pick up the phone to talk to Senator Egan about his treatment options. Politicians have no place in these personal decisions. Now, I have no illusions today that my testimony is going to influence any of you who already are philosophically opposed to abortion rights. However, I would like to address those of you who appreciate the complexity of this issue and the challenges that women face when they have to make a decision whether to consider adoption, raise a child, or end the pregnancy. In her sponsor statement, Representative Ledoux contends that this bill, quote, does not prevent abortions from taking place in Alaska, close quote. And on that point, I would definitely agree with her. Limiting access to Medicaid-funded abortions will not prevent abortions. It will, however, limit the number of safe legal abortions. And as you heard in additional testimony this afternoon, this will very likely drive women to seek illegal procedures. If you doubt this, you have only to look at what was happening in the years before Roe v. Wade. If you are truly committed, as I am, to making abortions safe, legal, and rare, then join me in supporting increased access, easy access for all Alaskan women to family planning services and to birth control, because we know these methods work to prevent the number of abortions. And most importantly, they do so without trampling on Alaskans' women's freedom of choice to make health care decisions. Thank you. If there's any questions?
Why do you assume that a back alley abortionist wouldn't be charging? I mean, this bill has nothing to do with whether women are allowed to have abortions in this state. It has to do with funding. So those cases that you're talking about where people had back alley abortions, that was before Roe versus Wade, which legalized the abortion procedure. Why would we assume that back alley people wouldn't be charging?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I'm not making that assumption, and I apologize if my testimony led you to believe that. I have no doubt that many illegal procedures, unsafe, unsanitary procedures are done by individuals who do charge. But all they have to do is undercut, if you will, Planned Parenthood. And all of a sudden, we have a situation that is putting the woman's health and her life at incredible risk.
Thank you. Representative Rupert?
Yes, Ms. Schrader. If somebody's poor and they can't afford to go to a regular doctor, a regular health care clinic to get an abortion, and they can't get Medicaid, might they then try to do something that's cheap and less safe?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I can only look to the history before Roe v. Wade to answer your question, and I think we would all agree that that answer is yes.
And if I may continue, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg?
Is that not what you meant by a back alley abortion, something that's cheap and unsafe?
Again, through the chair, yes, I did not use the term back alley abortion. My term was illegal procedure, but I would say that that is the appropriate interpretation of my comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it. Barbara Belknap.
Can I ask you a question? I haven't signed up.
We'll get you signed up. Ernest, would you help her? Please identify yourself and go right ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Belknap. I live here in Juneau, and I'm testifying in opposition to House Bill 173, an act that defines medically necessary abortion for purposes of making payments under the state Medicaid program. Abortion is legal in the United States and has been since the Supreme Court case of Roe versus Wade in 1973. I'm sure she's okay. Republican politicians across the country are relentlessly chipping away at a woman's legal right to an abortion. Abortion appears to trump the economy, veterans care, the environment, public health, and education. But here's the thing. The male of our species thinks a great deal about having sex, and far too many don't think much about what happens if the females get pregnant. Throughout history, the burden has been on the female to decide what she will do with an unwanted pregnancy, and it still is. I'll be 65 soon. There are women my age who know women and girls who died after illegal abortions or suffered infections that left them incapable of having any children. But 40 years after Roe versus Wade, which, and I quote, was a landmark United States Supreme Court decision establishing that most laws against abortion violate a constitutional right to privacy and overturning all state laws outlawing or unduly restricting abortion. Women are still dying in this country because they cannot access safe abortions in their communities. The obsession of Republican policymakers with making abortion as onerous as possible is not going to stop men and boys from getting women and teenage girls pregnant. It just means more misery for women. Using House Bill 173 to put 23 conditions on accessing Medicaid for an abortion is also not going to stop men and boys from getting low-income women and teenage girls pregnant. If it went to the courts, it could be ruled unconstitutional as a violation of a woman's right to privacy. This bill places the most vulnerable population of Alaska women in the crosshairs because majority members of this legislature just cut $8.3 million in base funding for Alaska Behavioral Health Services, the very services that could help single mothers and their children. Whether that remains in effect, that cut remains, is yet to be determined, but the very fact that it happened speaks volumes about the disconnect between abortion policy in state capitals across this country and the real-life consequences for women and girls. Last month, an article titled "New Report Paints Dire Picture of the Status of Women in Alaska" appeared in Alaskan papers and in several news outlets across the country. In the article, Senator McGuire is quoted as saying, "State leaders need to figure out a way to improve the lives of women in Alaska. With the respect, I ask that you drop House Bill 173 and focus on helping the women in Alaska and the children that they have now." Thank you.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you for your testimony. Excuse me. You talked about Republicans across the country. I don't see this as really a partisan bill. Mothers come in all political varieties. Politicians come in all political varieties. And I think there's some degree of fiscal responsibility involved here. And I would believe, after working with colleagues on both sides of the aisle in this legislature and in other places, then that neither side is, we may define fiscal responsibility a little bit differently depending on the issue, but we're all in favor of fiscal responsibility, and I don't think this particular bill has anything to do with one's political persuasion.
Representative Lynn, through the chair, I respectfully disagree. I think I should have had a list of the legislatures. I was thinking primarily North Dakota and several other states that have government Republican leaders in the legislature and in the governor's seat. And as far as I know, I can't think of a Democratic governor yet that's proposed something like this.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And that is the name of the game, respectful disagreement sometimes. We keep smiling and working. I forgot to recognize earlier, we've got Representative Isaacson out here in the audience, and if you would like to ask a question sometime, don't be afraid to flag down, and we'll give you a mic, and you can ask the question, okay? And I'd offer you a chair, but we got, like I say, a full house today, so thanks. Representative Grunberg?
Just one more question for Ms. Belknap. And if, yeah, for a one-word answer.
Thank you. Identify yourself again for the record.
My name is Barbara Belknap.
Through the chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Follow up to Representative Lynn's question. Are you aware of whether either political party has anything about abortion in their platform, and if so, what they might be?
I don't.
We'll have to research that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to Karen Robinson in the room also.
Thank you, Chair Keller and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is Karen Robinson, and I'm here today representing the Alaska Women's Lobby. The Alaska Women's Lobby is a statewide grassroots organization dedicated to the rights of women, children, and families. We've been around the hall since the early 80s and are, of course, still here fighting for these rights. Mr. Chairman, we are not able to support House Bill 173 in general and specifically oppose limiting the definition of medically necessary to exclude mental illness. We believe all women, including poor women, have the right to control their reproduction. Their medical decisions should remain private between a woman and her doctor. We believe doctors should be free to use their medical judgment based on the consideration of all factors. We believe the Supreme Court got it right when they defined the words medically necessary very broadly to allow the attending physician the room they need to make their best medical judgment. With that said, we also believe that hard work and tough decisions were made this last year. On June 27th of last year, the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services proposed clarifications to the rules that regulate when the state Medicaid program pays for abortion. Approximately 457 individuals in this state participated in the public comment period. Following this period, the administration took these comments into account when determining the final regulations. Believe it or not, the new regulations go into effect today. We believe and understand that two main goals of this legislation are to bring down costs to the state and lower the number of abortions. We believe there is a better way to get the results you desire. Clover Simon spoke very briefly to him. I'd like to talk a little more about those. We are here to work with you, the commissioner, and the governor. We appeal to the sponsor to hold off on this legislation and give the new regulations a chance to work. We appeal to you to work with the commissioner in implementing the Medicaid Women's Health and Family Planning option. It's no longer a waiver. It is now an option. In accomplishing your goal, this accomplishes your goal. It saves money, and it also brings down the number of abortions. 53% of the pregnancies in Alaska are unattended, and over 64% of the births resulting from those pregnancies are paid by Denali Kid Care. This results in the state cost of $29 million in 2006. It doesn't have to be this way. We could change the trend this year. A Medicaid Women's Health Family Program reduced the state cost, reduced the number of unattended pregnancies and abortions. The state could provide family planning services to over 12,000 women, avoid 1,700 unattended pregnancies, including 680 births and 430 abortions would all otherwise be publicly funded under Denali Kid Care. It achieves a savings of $7.3 million in the budget, and it starts immediately. States as diverse as Alabama, Arkansas, California, Oregon, and South Carolina each have saved over $15 million in a single year by instituting women's health care and family planning expansions. We believe it's time for Alaska to join these states in having a medical women's health program, and we look forward to working with you and trying to get it implemented in this state. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Ann, in the room? Thank you, Karen, very much for taking time to come in and testify.
Thank you for your time.
Ann, in the room? I think it's Fiorella. Okay, did I come close? Great. You would identify yourself and give us your testimony.
My name is Ann Fiorella. I'm here as a concerned citizen.
Move the microphone a little.
Speak right into it if you would, please.
Do you want me to repeat that?
Pardon?
Do you want me to repeat that?
Yeah, if you would,
My name is Ann Fiorella. I'm here as a concerned private citizen. I was born and raised in Alaska, but I worked in Seattle for the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services for a number of years. I want to try to weave in some thoughts I have regarding things I learned in a graduate level class in bioethics. Bioethics is a framework for making decisions about healthcare. It includes the principle of autonomy, that means the right of the individuals to make their own decisions regarding health care. This principle is embodied in the Alaska Constitution in the right to privacy. It's embodied in Medicaid regulations and requirements that the state provide for such things as person-centered planning. Even people who are developmentally and intellectually disabled are allowed to make decisions regarding their health care. I feel like these efforts to ban abortion seem not to recognize that principle. Instead, these efforts are to force pregnant women to forfeit their autonomy in ways that are not required of men or non-pregnant women. Currently, I know 5 pregnant women, and not one of them has lost their capacity to make decisions regarding health care. I think this regulation, House Bill, I think that in this thinking about bioethics, there's just this impermissible inconsistency in allowing competent adults to make decisions regarding health care except for pregnancy. I think this regulation is unnecessary. The state already does, in Medicaid regulations, the state does not pay for services that are not medically necessary. The state has a system to ensure program integrity and provider compliance with these regulations. And in these regulations, medical necessity is determined by community standards and the judgment of physicians by their peers. I think there's sufficient safeguards against the performance of abortion that is not medically necessary in the current Medicaid regulations. Like Dr. Hoganson, I think this bill is overly prescriptive and confused in many ways. I find it particularly flawed that it does not include a provision regarding fetal abnormalities, nor does AS 1816090 definition of abortion. It does not provide for an exception in the event of such a finding of a fetal abnormality. I'm very concerned about this because in my family we had a recent experience regarding a baby who's on an ultrasound showed did not have a brain. This was devastating to our family, you know, and not just to the mother and father, but to potential grandmother, grandfather, aunts, uncles, cousins. I would not wish upon anybody the need to go through that kind of thing. It's far worse for a mother to have to continue with a pregnancy with that kind of abnormality than to have an abortion. But under our regulations, that would not be allowed. I just can't even imagine the mental turmoil and the disruption that would cause to families. Now, I see that the ostensible reason for a bill is cost savings, but I, in my opinion, and this seems like an anti-abortion effort based on somebody's religious values and the claim that certain individuals do not want their taxes to be used to pay for abortion. I am appalled that the state under this bill would act as an agent for the proponents of certain religious beliefs to force birth. I ask you to choose respect for women and recognize that the principle of autonomy requires that the state not interfere with a woman's decision regarding her health care, even when she receives state funding for pregnancy services. Thank you.
And thank you. I know it's hard to come and testify, and I thank you for doing that. If you'll just very respectfully, though, I mean, as a co-sponsor on the bill, this is not about banning abortions, and it's not about decisions for individuals. You know, I mean, I understand that that's part of the discussion. It's very valid to bring up, but this is about who pays. You know, should the state be paying? And that's so. It just when you said that we become an agent for a religious group, you know, that's a little bit far. You know, I think, and I respectfully, that's not the intent. The intent is to. The court made it very clear that there's a distinction between an elective abortion and one that is medically necessary. And what we're trying to do, what the sponsor's trying to do, and I'm not speaking for her, but as a co-sponsor, is trying to define those terms so we know what we're doing in the state to eliminate confusion. So.
I'm not saying as a health professional, you cannot list when abortion would be. There are many kinds of. Yeah. Problems that can occur.
And I really didn't mean to put you on the spot, but if you say it in the mic if you wanted, I didn't mean to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead and make your statement on the mic, because that way it'll go on the record. Otherwise, it'll get missed. And
I forgot what I said. I think that you cannot define medical necessity by producing a list of diagnoses when it would be allowed. There are just too many medical issues that could be involved. And, you know, I would certainly ask you to look at fetal abnormalities because I do not see that included anywhere in this regulation.
Okay. Again, I didn't mean to argue, and thank you for bringing that up. We, looking at the number of people on the list and looking at the clock, I'm in a very tight spot as a chair. We have a lot of people out there to testify for HB3. We are not going to get done with 173 in time, but what we'll do is we'll have the committee meeting until 3 o'clock to schedule time on 173, and then we'll go ahead and introduce HB3 and try to take as much testimony as I can. I'll stick around, and as many of the committee members that can, I invite you to stick if you can past the hour. I apologize. We got two bills with a lot of testifiers the same day that we didn't anticipate. So with that, we're going to go to Karen. Is it Randall? Big Lake? From Big Lake, Karen? Oh, here, she's in the room.
Hello. I wasn't really planning on speaking today, but I'm glad to have this opportunity, and I'm very thankful for this House bill and for all of the co-sponsors, every single one of you.
Into the mic because we would like to hear, and some of us are getting aged. And
I am.
Well, I'm thankful for each and every one of you for co-sponsoring this House Bill number 173, and I support it too because I feel that since it is defining medically necessary abortion for purposes of making payments under the state Medicare program, I feel that this is also a very important moral issue. And as a teacher in both the Anchorage and the Matsu school districts, I feel that it's very important to get the issue of abstinence taught within the classrooms so that we don't have this out of control sexual activity and you know, family difficulties, you know, and just forming relationships. So I feel that's a very important issue to address and to be able to put money toward that of teaching abstinence in the schools. And also I have a testimony about a woman who was raped, and so I'm not I feel that to put our tax dollars toward paying for a rape is not necessary because that, again, is a moral issue up to each woman or whoever it is that is involved in this, because I have a friend who was raped at knife point and she decided to keep the baby. She wasn't married, and because she kept the baby is still alive. She has no guilt. She has a clear conscience. And she's a very, you know, respected and dedicated person to choosing life. So, each and every situation is different for each person and how they morally look at the situation of having been subjected to a rape. And then also I think the issue of breast cancer needs to be addressed, because if you have an abortion during that time of your mammary glands, you know, forming those lactating cells that increase tremendously from the time that the baby starts growing. It's not a fetus, it's a actual baby growing within the womb. Then you have these cells that are continually increasing. And if you cut that off at the time of the baby's formation and the whole development of a woman's body, then there's a higher degree of problems of breast cancer. And that study is being researched since, like, I think 1995, and there's more and more cases. I just read an article today. I don't have it all memorized. But out of the 55 million babies that have been aborted so far since 1973, about 1.5 million women have developed breast cancer as a result of that. And because of that, that's going to be another problem of our tax dollars, paying for all of these unnecessary cancer conditions that happen within the mammary glands. And so I feel that's, you know, there's a 300% increase of breast cancer happening as, as a problem of abortion taking place. And so I feel that we really need to look at things on a moral basis and take into consideration where our nation is going and the unnecessary causes of death that are happening as a result of killing our own flesh and blood.
Thank you, Karen. That's all I have. So everybody knows, we have four more in the room, and then we're going to go to back online, and there's eight there. But right now we're going to go to George Brown, MD, no stranger to the committee, and we will ask him for his testimony. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record. You know the drill, and give us your testimony.
I'm George Brown, a pediatrician. I live in Douglas, Alaska. Chairman Keller and committee members, I've listened to these debates for a long time, and specifically a number of hearings, and I celebrate the fact that we can have civil discussions about topics that are very complicated and very difficult, and I applaud and respect you for your doing this. I wanted to say two things. One is, speaking as a physician, I do not think that unintended pregnancies are a criminal problem, nor are they a moral problem. They are a health problem. How to prevent them is a real ongoing challenge for all of us. I very much want people who have very different opinions on both sides to try to sit back and listen and hear what other people are saying. And I listened carefully to the previous person who's testifying, and it is really a serious issue. What I'm suggesting is there's not a simple solution. I believe we will get to a solution. But the one thing that I believe we can work on is to figure out the areas in which we can agree. And one of those is to figure out how to prevent as many unintended pregnancies as possible. Sensible behavior, ethical behavior, abstinence, obviously they are all a part of this, but they're not the only part. And so that's what I would really urge that we all try to do. Unfortunately, I don't think that this bill helps us go in that direction. At least I would encourage that both Senate Bill 49 and this bill be heard in the appropriate Health and Social Services Committee, because this truly is a health problem, and together we can solve it over a period of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I was just wondering whether you would agree that an unintended pregnancy where the woman or the child has no health problems, if the woman asked for an abortion, would you categorize that as a non-medically necessary abortion?
Well, because I don't think you can separate physical health and behavioral health or mental health. I think that any woman in that position, and I'm a man, I can never know how that is, but my experience in working with lots of mothers, that is a horrendous, very gut-wrenching and life-shattering decision to have to make. I think everything should be done by everybody involved to have that person continue to have a healthy baby born. But I don't think, and what I'm saying, to answer your question, when they are involved to make a decision like that, their cortisol level goes up, their ability to make rational decisions is affected. That's part of what I mean when you can't separate mental health and physical health. And to try to do that, I think, just flies against more and more we're learning about this problem. That's the best way I can answer the question.
Just follow up?
Follow up, but keep in mind the clock is ticking.
So,
What?
The clock is ticking.
Let's assume that health is defined where the woman or the baby has no physical health problems and is not diagnosed with a mental disorder, bipolar, schizophrenia, etc. There's no mental health problem, there's no physical health problem, but the woman wants an abortion because she thinks that she can't afford the pregnancy, or it's going to interfere with her schooling, it's going to interfere with travel plans, it's going to interfere with whatever. Would you characterize that abortion request as a non-medically necessary abortion?
I don't think I could, but again, this shows how complicated it is, because if she makes that choice and later regrets it, it clearly is going to affect her physical health as well as her mental health. And so that's why I said, in the best world, we should all try to do everything to prevent her from having an abortion. But I come down on the side that it's a decision that an individual person should have the ability to make, hopefully with support of family and not just doctor. And my experience is that what you described often is a situation in which this person grew up in a stressed family without a lot of support, and they are not making good decisions. And that's why I'm saying it's complicated.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. I think you probably answered the question, but what I'm hearing you say is basically any woman comes in and from your medical examination, it appears to be perfectly healthy. And the fetus, from what you can tell, appears to be perfectly healthy. It could be medically necessary, quote unquote, if the woman wants to have it, because she'd be upset or maybe have a future problem if she did have it. Am I hearing you incorrectly?
No, you're not. I'm saying that...
So anything goes?
No. No, no. I'm saying that it's her decision, but I'm saying that I would not, and I know many physicians who do this all the time, in any way encourage that. I would want her to get counseling and to make what would be the best decision in the long run for her. That's what I would do.
I have more, but I'll pass.
Okay. Representative will do.
So under that scenario...
Oh, I'm sorry. Grunberg had his hand up, and I just spaced it, so please. But go ahead.
Thank you. I have two lines of questioning, fairly brief, but I appreciate your courtesy. If I may, through the chair. First, the witness who testified just before you, I thought, said that there is a higher degree of breast cancer resulting from an abortion. I'm not sure if I heard that right, but I think that was the gist of her testimony. I don't recall hearing that kind of evidence before. Number one, is there a higher rate of breast cancer after an abortion? Number two, after abortions, number two, has any causal connection been shown?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I've not heard that before either. As I listened to her testimony, it became clear to me that in the situations in which women choose to have abortions, they are already very likely experiencing a lifestyle that's going to increase their risk for all types of cancer, smoking, drinking, etc., because that's a given with these kinds of problems. And to say it would just be related to their having abortion, I'm not aware of that data.
Thank you. If I may briefly ask another line of questioning. A moment ago, or a few witnesses ago, there was a testimony where a woman here at the witness stand testified that there had been in her family a pregnancy that resulted in a fetus with no brain. And the bill itself now talks about the phrase is medically necessary abortion, and that's what we're wrestling with here. And it talks about an abortion must be performed to avoid the threat of serious risk to the life or physical health of a woman. And that's defined here, basically dealing with problems that the woman might suffer. I don't see any indication of any examination of problems that the fetus might suffer if it were allowed to continue full term. And what I'm wondering is, do you feel that there should be some provision in the legislature allowing a termination of a pregnancy in which a fetal abnormality exists that is likely to result in the death of the fetus?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, yes, I definitely believe that should be included. And it goes to the same point I'm making about emotional or mental and physical health being integral. That's a very, very difficult situation, and I will stop there. Thank you.
And just one final follow-up on that. When your last phrase, physical or mental health, you mean linking the foreseeable problem to the fetus to the physical and mental health of the mother?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg. Representative Ledoux. I was thinking of Gruenberg. Sorry.
So Dr. Brown, would you feel comfortable under the regulations that currently exist, in which a doctor must certify, or exist as of today, in which a doctor must certify that an abortion is medically necessary in order to get Medicaid reimbursement? If a woman walked into your office with no physical problems, no psychological problems that had been diagnosed by a psychiatrist or nothing obvious, and no impairment to the fetus, but she really wanted an abortion because she wanted to continue her school, would you feel comfortable under those circumstances? And she was upset about it. Under those circumstances, certifying that the abortion was medically necessary?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, my specialty is pediatrics, and I've never been faced with that. I've thought about it a lot, and I think I'll answer again like I did earlier. I would not feel comfortable doing that. I would want to do everything I could to try to see if there really is an underlying emotional problem with this woman who is about to make this choice. That's what I mean when I say we should do all we can to prevent unwanted pregnancies and as many abortions as possible. But the ultimate choice, I think, needs to be with the individual and her family.
Thank you. Can we move on? But Dr. Brown, I got to say that this is not about the choice of the woman. This is about who pays for the abortion. That's the one point. Another point is it's too late to keep it simple because we already have the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment has made a distinction between mental and physical abortions, and the Supreme Court of the state of Alaska has clearly concluded that there's a distinction to be made between an elective abortion and a medically necessary abortion. That presents us with the problem of making those definitions clear. And in so doing, yes, it's a very tense issue, and I appreciate the fact that you appeal to us to listen, and to pay attention. And in that spirit is why I'm bringing this up. I'm not trying to prove you wrong or anything, but I'm just saying, look, the distinction can be made, should be made, and that's what this bill is trying to do, in my estimation. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Karen Lewis in the room. And by the way, we are not going to make it. HB3 has not been heard before, right? And so it was on the schedule. We need to try to get it introduced, but we're not going to get to the testimony today in HB3. And I really apologize for that. And we will
we're just going to introduce it.
Yeah, we'll wait till after 3 o'clock, and we'll introduce the bill. And then I'm just going to have to ask him back, and I hope you're gracious, the people that are in the room, to talk to HB3. I really do apologize. I'm very sorry. Okay.
Important issues.
Karen.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chairman Keller and other distinguished committee members. Thank you for having this hearing. That's awesome. My name is Karen Lewis, and I'm the Alaska Director for the Center for Bioethical Reform. which is a social reform organization that uses imagery to show the truth about abortion. And the truth is, abortion is an act of violence that kills a baby. And I do not want to be an unwilling accessory to killing babies with my tax money, and neither do most other people that live in this country. The Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade pertaining to children in the womb is akin to the Supreme Court's Dred Scott decision, which declared that African Americans are personal property. And as personal property, the owners could do what they wanted to their property, even kill them. Today, we as a nation do not tolerate even the thought of slavery. We collectively look back at that time in history and were amazed that that ever could have happened. Well, here we are again. Children in the womb, uniquely genetic and beautifully designed human beings, are being killed by the millions, 55 million to date. They are indiscriminately being destroyed because they have been deemed the property of their mother. And the mothers have deemed them unwanted and have sentenced them to death. This is unjust, unrighteous, and immoral, and has no place in our nation of freedom. Dred Scott was an unjust law decided by imperfect and fallible people, and it was eventually overturned, as it should have been. And Roe will also fall. It was a horrible ruling decided by a handful of imperfect and fallible people. It is an unjust and immoral law that has caused innocent blood to cover our nation from coast to coast, and my prayer is that it is vanquished soon. The left used to say, don't like abortion? Don't have one. Now they say, don't like abortion? Too bad. You will pay for them anyway. That's why we're here. I'm thankful that the legislature is working towards defining the medically necessary language pertaining to abortion in our state. This clarification of terms will protect the taxpayers from being unwilling accomplices in killing babies. In the previous testimonies, people were saying that the decision to abort should be made by the woman and her doctor. Does anyone see the conflict of interest here? How can you put the decision of killing the child into the hands of the person or the doctor who will financially benefit from the abortion and who also does not have the moral character? They would not be killing babies for a living if they had scruples. The abortionist in Philadelphia who is currently being tried for murder is an example of their greed and seared conscience. He charges about $5,000 for killing late-term babies. If the baby was born alive, he or his assistant would sever the baby's spinal cord at the neck to ensure a dead baby. All abortion is killed for financial gain, and it should be criminal behavior. Someone said fair. Is it fair for us to pay for killing babies? No, it's not. Someone mentioned rare. Is 1.2 million abortions a year rare? I don't think so. Someone said child abuse is caused if the abortions aren't allowed. Do you think killing a child in the womb is not abuse? That's the ultimate child abuse. One woman said controlling. She wants women to be able to control their own reproduction. That would be great if women could control their own reproduction without killing another child, you know, without killing the child within them. That'd be wonderful. I would like to see that too. So in closing, I'd like to quote Thomas Jefferson from 1908. He said, "The care of human life and happiness, and not their destruction, is the first and only legitimate object of good government." Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Karen. Carol Brady. Thank you, Carol. I suspect you were here to testify in HB3 and decided you want to testify in this, but that's great. Please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
I'm Carol Brady. I'm really happy I came in and listened to this. I've been suffering over this issue by myself since I was 13. And lately it's been bothering me, so I know it's bothered me all my life. I was living with my sister and brother-in-law, and she had been drinking very heavy, and she was allowed to go with other people, and when she returned, she had been violently raped. And right then, I didn't have any voice, and if I did, I think I would have told my brother-in-law to take her to the doctor, but he didn't. And I do believe that this little boy, he was always attracted to turning up furnaces. And as long as I was there, everything was fine. I went to the school after when I was about 15, and 5 months later, they all perished in a fire. The thing that I really wanted to ask about is it really emphasized that people should know what to do with a person when they're that drunk and take them for, you know, to look, have a doctor look at them. I mean, I think I'd be asking this question of where, because it could be further discussed there about how families should know, even though they're very young, because if something isn't done, the person himself is very bothered by it all their life. So I hope that it could be discussed, because I wished I had known what to do. And I don't think children are too young. If they see something like this, they should know the people are too drunk to call a doctor. It was way back in 1939, and I was sitting here and I start shaking all over because I had this question about having it emphasized more when the woman is so drunk and nobody is taking care of
very
her
hard
trauma.
Very hard questions, and I don't think we have any easy answers.
Yeah.
But thank you, Carol, for coming in to testify. It's a
thank you.
Very much appreciated. Robin Smith? Robin Smith in the room. Must have left. Nikki Hunter? No Nikki Hunter? I have...
Hi, I'm Nikki Hunter, and I'm here via telephone.
Okay, Nikki, would you identify who you represent and give us your testimony?
All right. My name is Nikki Hunter. I live up here in Salcha, Alaska, and I am the executive director of a center called Fascinating Womanhood Alaska. And through the center, I offer a lot of things for women, including pregnancy tests and speaking to them about carrying their pregnancies. I'm pro-life. And even prenatal classes for all three trimesters. I've been providing peer counseling for women considering abortion for about 10 years now, so that's some background for you. And I just have a brief testimony, and that is that I support this legislation because I'm for any legislation that reduces the number of abortions in Alaska and the public funding thereof. And if you have questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Thank you, Nikki. But I do want to point out that we don't really know that that will be the answer. We're talking, you know, I mean, I'm against abortion, and I'll be happy to talk to anybody about it. But that's really not what the bill's about, and we don't know what the effect is going
well,
to be.
Well, I do believe that it would reduce the number of abortions, because right now, medically necessary, you know, this gives it a clear definition, and, you know, and
I hope you're right, but it's, again, that we have to conjecture a little bit on that one. Thank you very much for calling in. Very much appreciate
it. Oh, you're welcome.
We're going to go to online now to Amy Ballenbeck in Homer. You've been patiently waiting for a long time, if you're still there. And then we'll go to two in Fairbanks, and then we have another list some more. But Amy?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Give us your name and who you represent, and give us your testimony.
My name is Amy Bollenbach, and I'm representing myself.
and I realize that this is a very emotional issue. I agree entirely with Dr. Brown and the other doctor who was testifying, which shows that it's really, really difficult for a law to list all the conditions that would explain medically necessary. And so I won't give a long testimony, but I would like to point out that Carol, I believe her name was, from Juneau, her testimony shows very clearly that the public and the state will pay dearly for unplanned pregnancies that the woman doesn't want and may have become pregnant through intoxication or other things. Since this is a finance committee, this is a judiciary committee, so we're talking about legal things, I'm sorry. But in any case, in the law, the state will have to pay a lot of money for damaged fetuses that become damaged babies and damaged adults. And so that's one thing to consider. But I believe that every individual, poor or rich, should have an opportunity to have medical care. And my name is Amy Bollenbach, and I'm very much against House B, HB 173.
Thank you, Amy. We're going to go now to, we're going to hold off on Fairbanks just a little bit. D. Logan, how is it? In Juneau?
Yes, hello. This is D. Loganbaugh, calling from Juneau. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. I'm representing myself, and I'm just speaking against the bill. One of the things is, for talking costs, have people really considered, assuming, you know, when people speak of the little babies, little innocents, yeah, they're thinking of about a six-month-old who's chubby and charming. But, of course, what do you do with a number of these babies, poor things, that have something like part of the brain missing or severe problems? That would, what do you do with them? The Reagan administration was charged with caring very deeply about babies from conception to birth, but... And I know Alaska would not do that, but it is a very high cost to take care of these poor little things. So that's just something to keep in mind. And then on a more personal note here, we're talking about abstinence and how that should be taught. Well, if you've looked at the figures, the South particularly has big on abstinence, and they have some of the highest, if not the highest, pregnancy rates in the whole U.S., so... just there. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to see if I can answer them.
Thank you, Dee, and we appreciate your brevity, and we understand where you're coming from. Scott Phillips? Scott Phillips, are you online? Dr. Chenault? Regina Chenault?
Yes, hello. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Regina Chenault. I'm a physician of 20 years. I'm calling from Anchorage, representing myself. I'm a mother of three kids. Just make sure you can hear me before I keep going on.
Thank you. We have you loud and clear, Doctor. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'm a mother of three children, three greatest things that have ever happened to me in my life, a hockey mom. And... as a practicing physician for 20 years, have been sitting here listening to all this testimony, and I very much support a bill defining medical necessary procedures for the purposes of public funds not being used to pay for abortions. Medical necessary is a term that is very defined. I went to medical school for 4 years and did a 5-year general surgery trauma training and have been involved in the state of Alaska on the Violent Crimes Board for a number of years. And medical necessary is a service or treatment that is absolutely necessary to protect the health status or the condition of a patient. And it's something that could adversely affect that patient's condition if it's omitted from the standard practice of medicine. So, as a physician, that is very well defined, and I think it was, I forget who said it, somebody mentioned appendicitis on the committee. Appendicitis has very strict indications or a way to diagnose it. The diagnosis is made, and the treatment is appendectomy. So I think some of this testimony got lost in arguing for or against abortion, or the focus of this is, should we pay for medical necessary abortions, or what are they, or should we use our funds? And the criteria have been around. Again, I'm a 20 years practicing doctor, so I consider myself a subject matter expert on these criteria for what's medically necessary. I have to meet each patient's needs, make a diagnosis, carry out an operation or a procedure. Then I have to submit all that paperwork to the appropriate payer, whether that be Medicaid or an insurance company. And the criteria are very strict. There's about four or five points that the medical necessary procedure has to be appropriate for the symptoms and the diagnosis and the treatment of the condition, the illness, or the injury of the patient. And just because you're pregnant, that does not mean you need an abortion paid for by the state of Alaska. The second criteria for medically necessary is you've provided for the diagnosis. You direct the care towards the direct treatment of the condition, illness, or injury. And again, pregnancy in and of itself does not mandate an abortion. Thirdly, in following standard medical practice. So again, just because you're pregnant, you don't have to get an abortion. That does not lead to an abortion. Pregnancy does not lead to an abortion. And as far as dealing with payers, insurance companies, whether it be Blue Cross, Medicare, to single out Blue Cross or any other payer, the procedure is not done primarily for the convenience of the member, the plan member, meaning the pregnant patient, or the plan provider, meaning the doctor who's going to get paid a lot of money to kill a baby. I mean, these are very clear definitions, so I'm not sure why I haven't heard all day long in this testimony that anyone else has ever heard of what medically necessary means. And the fifth criteria would be that the most appropriate level or type of services supplied to the patient for the so that the patient can be safely cared for. So in the bottom, just to finish wrap up here, I made some notes as we were going through this testimony. There are actually very few medical indications that absolutely indicate that an abortion be performed. I heard previous testimony when the baby doesn't have a brain. Well, yes, you cannot live without a brain. That would be an indication for an abortion. We heard from another physician in Fairbanks that she couldn't really understand what all these, you know, the list that you have there that I don't have in front of me about what defines, you know, could be coming from a long, complicated illness. But doctors define a very short list of what makes a patient unstable. It comes down to your vital signs, like your heartbeat, whether or not you're breathing, and what your blood pressure is. So that's the unstable patient. So say the pregnant patient was having one of a limited number of illnesses that can cause a pregnant patient to become unstable, then that would be, if that pregnant woman is unstable by vital signs, an abortion would be indicated in that situation. And to say that just because you're pregnant, you're at risk, well, that would make every female pregnant woman in the world at risk. And I furthermore add that babies with syndromes or sick babies that are going to be born with a disease or illness, they are every day raised by families, and I see them as my patients, and they have good productive lives, and they're good members of our society. And we don't need to kill these babies with abnormalities. They don't deserve to be killed. We shouldn't be paying for it in the state of Alaska. And, you know, I would say we all have some abnormalities in our own little special way. I'll wrap up just by saying that, you know, nobody's forcing birth upon anyone. That goes back to what this bill's not about. It's about paying for the termination of a baby that is the victim in this act. And I just reiterate that termination of these unintended pregnancies should not be paid for by the state of Alaska, and I can clarify that breast cancer question. That there is no increased breast cancer with abortions. That's not true. Whoever said that. And the other time of an abortion would be indicated if the fetus is dead inside the mother. That fetus, whether it be early in the pregnancy or it would be late term, there are sometimes the baby dies at 9 months inside the mother. That fetus should be removed as an abortion to save the mother's life from infection risk. And having a baby, there was a bunch of testimony that I completely disagree with about having a baby does not prevent a mother from going on to school or going on a vacation. In fact, that mother should look to that baby as a motivation for her life. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. We're honored. We've had three MDs call today, and you in particular have waited for a long time to testify, and we're very honored and grateful. Thank you. Kathy Gerard.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Kathy Gerard, and I live in House District 28 in Anchorage. I'm here today to urge the House Judiciary Committee to vote no on House Bill 173. I've lived in Alaska for 25 years, and I take issue with what appears to be an annual assault by politicians on private medical matters that should be left to the conscience and confidentiality between a woman, family, faith, and her doctor. Similar to Americans' discontent with our national Congress, you will find many Alaskans who would prefer that our state legislators focus on issues that really matter to us, especially when proposed bills like HB 173 have already been found unconstitutional by the Alaska Supreme Court and administratively has been addressed by the Department of Health and Health and Human Services. No one seems to question whether taxpayers or the state of Alaska has the fiscal responsibility to Medicaid recipients that find themselves with health complications associated with their personal decisions to overeat, to eat poorly, to smoke, to drink to excess, to use drugs, or to partake in other known risky behaviors that can produce expensive and well-documented health consequences. But in contrast, I don't believe our legislature has ever proposed legislation to determine medical necessity for treating the health complications associated with unsavory behaviors. To me, HB 173 is just another veiled attempt at government-sanctioned morality offered under the guise of fiscal responsibility. HB 173 is bad fiscal policy, bad health policy, and bad social policy, and will likely meet an expensive court battle which the state really does not need to incur at this time. I urge you please to vote no against HB 173. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you for your patience with us in getting to you. Clayton Trotter?
No problem.
Yes, hello?
Clayton, do you have a testimony for us?
I do. My full name for your record is Richard Clayton Trotter. I am general counsel of the Justice Foundation, which is a public interest law firm, which is based in San Antonio, Texas, but I am a resident of Anchorage. I live here in Anchorage and registered to vote here and so forth. The Justice Foundation is a public interest law firm that has been fighting the pro-life cause for a number of years. We represented the former Roe v. Wade, the former Doe v. Bolton, when both of those ladies, whose cases brought abortion on demand to America, wanted to go back to the Supreme Court. We took them back to the Supreme Court three times in order to seek to demonstrate to the court a fundamental premise that has not been discussed that I've heard. I've been listening to the testimony for over an hour now on the Internet. We have a wonderful ability to listen to things over the Internet here and watch it. But basically, there is a premise that abortion is good for women, and that's a fallacy. At the Justice Foundation, we have over 5,000 sworn testimonies and affidavits of post-abortive women, which I'll make available to the committee if you desire it, detailing how abortion hurts them and how it was not a decision that lent itself to their health and well-being in any way, shape, or form. Many of whom tried to commit suicide. And, of course, we don't know how many women actually were successful in committing suicide. The testimonies of the women who've actually had abortions probably should be considered on whether or not the state should fund them. But I would point out to the committee that this bill is not about whether abortion really is good for women or not. There are some who think it is. There are some who think it isn't. I, for one, think it's a terrible decision or choice for a woman. But based on the testimony that I have heard, but the issue is whether the state, i.e. the taxpayers of Alaska, can be required to pay for abortions. And taking money out of my pocket as a taxpayer to fund abortion is something that I am decidedly opposed to. I am decidedly opposed to abortion, obviously. But there's the greater issue is, or at least the issue for this committee, I don't know if it's a greater issue, probably the issue of abortion itself is the greater issue, is whether or not the state should be requiring its taxpayers to pay for abortions. And given the enormous diversity of opinion that was expressed today on this issue, it seems like it's not something that the state should be funding. If people want to have abortions, it is legal. The question is whether or not the state's going to fund them. And in a time when we have 20 million Americans out of work, at a time when we're talking about cutting funds for education, for health and safety, for personnel across the board, certainly an elective procedure is not one that the state ought to be funding. Now, it's also surprising to me that there's been so much discussion about what medical necessary is. You know, there is a book that Medicare and Medicaid uses which lists all of the medically necessary diagnoses. It's a multi-volume book, and the issue of whether medical necessity is covered is constantly the subject of Medicare and Medicaid payments, and one must demonstrate the medical necessity for procedure before you can get a refund in any area of Medicare and Medicaid. And particularly the arguments that say, well, we shouldn't have the state coming in between the doctor and her patient. It's funny that the same people who say that say, well, yeah, but we should have a national health insurance, and the state should decide what procedures are going to be paid for and what procedures are not going to be paid for across the board. And you know, and basically we're going to reimburse for everything, which of course means that the state comes in between every medical procedure, every doctor, and every patient. So this is really just it's a financial bill. And I think that the committee should look at it as such and say that the state of Alaska is simply not going to pay for elective procedures that are certainly of, you know, very, very controversial elective procedures, but that's what this bill is about. Now, it so happens that the elective procedure is one that I would abhor and certainly consider to be murder, but that's not the issue. The issue is whether the taxpayers of the state of Alaska should be required to pay for those procedures and should be forced to fund those procedures through tax dollars. So therefore, I would urge voting in favor of this bill.
Mr. Chair. We have a question, Clayton.
Certainly.
Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Trotter, I'm going to ask you a question, and I guess I'm just asking you because you're the latest witness that has said something, although other witnesses have. And if you'd prefer not to answer it, I can ask it to someone else. Said that we should not, as a state, fund this certain procedure. Most people don't want to do it. How about other procedures? Do you think that the public should decide whether we should fund appendectomies, heart operations, et cetera? Who should decide that?
Well, I frankly believe that who decides whether you actually have a particular procedure is something that the physician decides in consultation with their patient. That's the case in all medical procedures that I know of, at least at some point. Now, there is a question. We have testimony from the Justice Foundation where women didn't actually even meet their doctor until the doctor was actually performing the abortion. That there are some abortion mills in this country where there is no physician-patient relationship. They don't even know who the patient is. They don't even know who the doctor doesn't know. And there are abortion mills. I don't know that they have any here in Anchorage. but they certainly exist in the lower 48. But, you know, yes, the doctor and the patient decide. The question is not, though, whether they decide to have the abortion. That's obviously between the doctor and the patient. The question is, after the abortion, who pays for it? And the taxpayer or the in the public at large, you know, or the individual who's, or a member of the family of the individual who's accessed the service. And I have some children that I've adopted from Haiti who have serious dental problems, and I would love for the state to pay to replace all their teeth, but the state won't pay for it. I have to pay for that.
Clayton, and, Representative Goldberg has a follow-up here.
Yeah, maybe okay. I misunderstood.
I'm sorry. I can't see you. I apologize.
I may have misspoken. I didn't mean to say whether they should have it. I meant who should decide whether the public funds. Should we take a poll and see whether the public should pay for abortions, teeth, or whatever? Who should decide these things?
Well, obviously, once you get into once you get into the issue of public funding for any medical procedure, you guys decide. The buck stops with you.
Representative Millett?
And, you know, I mean, the legislatures decide that. That's what legislatures do, is make those kind of decisions once it's into the public realm.
Representative Millett?
Thank you. I guess my question to you is, because we are defining what is medically necessary, and we're deciding whether it's elective or non-elective. So I guess it comes down to, in my head, as I've been sitting here listening to the questions, this bill is not about abortion. We're not saying abortion is illegal in the state of Alaska. What we're saying is that Alaskans don't want public money to go towards elective procedures, any elective procedures. I would assume that would include Botox, facelifts, eye lifts. I mean, all those things are elective by nature. You don't need them. It's much different when you go get an appendectomy, because you actually, nobody goes in to get an elective appendectomy. I mean, they go in because they're hurt or they're ill. Or
go in the emergency room.
Or in
emergency room.
So I guess, you know, when we come down to this bill, it goes back directly to who pays for what. And, you know, I think the legislature has a long list of things that we've mandated to be paid for and mandated not to be paid for. If I didn't miss last 4 years at Hess, I wouldn't know that. But I think this is all we're saying in this legislation is, and do you agree with me that we're just saying that an elective procedure shouldn't be paid for with public dollars?
That's my understanding. Now, I understand this bill, though, is directed at elective abortions, but I don't think any elective procedure. I mean, cosmetic surgery, you know, a facelift and a tummy tuck shouldn't be paid for with public dollars.
Okay, but put in
there's no question about that.
When you define medically necessary, right? I mean, it could be medically necessary. It's just because we're talking about abortion that everybody's upset, because it is an emotional issue. People struggle with this day in and day out. But we miss the opportunity to talk about what the bill really does. And you hit it on the head, is that this bill is about funding elective procedures with public money. That's all this is. This isn't saying abortion's good, abortion's bad. We don't want abortions in Alaska. This isn't a right wing, left wing. This is about who's going to pay for an elective procedure. Take out the word abortion and just put elective procedure in there. And is that how you see it?
Yes, absolutely. Now the thing is that it is, you know, one third, if you will, of America has participated in abortion. One third of the people in the country, one third of the women over the last, you know, 40 years. You know, there have been 55 million abortions. And people have really solid views about this. But the question is, those of us, and I'm in that category, those of us who consider it murder, who consider it taking the life of an unborn child, it is abhorrent to us that we could have our tax dollars taken for that purpose. And so I think it actually is more than just whether or not we're paying for an elective procedure. I think it's a question also of free speech. It's a question of who is going to be in charge of the public dollars. Do those who demand abortions, do they have the power to demand abortions at the cost and the expense of every other taxpayer? When I pay my property taxes on my home, where I'm trying to raise my family, And those taxes don't go to fix the road and put a speed bump in front of my house, but rather they go to pay for abortions. I mean, it's a funding priority issue. And I think you can save a lot more lives putting in more speed bumps, frankly, and certainly than paying for elective abortions, which always takes a life. It always takes a human life. And the courts have held that it is a human life. And in the most recent pronouncements of the Supreme Court, a lot of people like to quote Roe v. Wade, but that's not the most recent pronouncement of the Supreme Court. In the partial birth abortion case, the Supreme Court said that some women come to regret aborting the infant life they once created and sustained. And they did that on the basis of the testimony of the women that the Justice Foundation presented to the court. So, that regret and that pain and suffering shouldn't be paid for with tax dollars.
Thank you very much for calling. I'm gonna what it is. We're racing the clock.
I know you got
three more online, and then I think we will have it covered as far as the available testifiers. But Clayton, I really appreciate you taking time to call. And if you have more to say or whatever, please contact us. We will be taking the bill up again on Thursday or Friday as time allows. Joan Franz, Fairbanks, and again, thank you for your patience.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to talk, Mr. Chairman, and I just want to say I hope that the discussion with additional people doesn't go on like the last one. I've been sitting here a long time, and you did pick the third person that walked in the room up here to speak. I don't know if that was intentional because of the person, but it seems like that last person testifying had a platform, and I would appreciate that not happening. Anyway, for the record, my name is Joan Franz, and I live in Senate District S and House District 38. I'm here today to urge a no vote on House Bill 173. I do not want state laws to discriminate against low-income women and their private health care decisions that should be between their doctor and themselves. On most issues, Alaskans fiercely defend their independence and right to make decisions, in the case of air quality in Fairbanks, to the detriment of the entire community. Government stay out of my personal business appears to be a convenient banner used by lawmakers for certain issues only. When lawmakers are considering regulations of the decisions made between a doctor and an individual, this limits personal rights or decisions and is an invasion of and disregard of individual rights and freedom. Please focus on laws that will protect our health and well-being from poor air quality, promote better education in our state, and leave ACEs taxation in place to pay for these services rather than limiting individual rights. There is already a statement requiring doctors to certify publicly funded abortions being medically necessary. We don't need further definition. That is, again, a narrowing, and I feel that you are denying personal freedom when you attempt to narrow and limit the personal judgment of a physician and who is working with their patient. Reduction of abortions is clearly linked to good sex education and access to birth control. Please support these issues. Again, vote no on House Bill 173. I think the intent of this discussion was meant to be a discussion about whether medically necessary needs to be defined, and in my opinion, it does not.
Thank you, Joan. Gene James, are you there yet? Yeah. Again, thank you for your patience. Sorry.
Yes, I'm still here. I've been here since 1 o'clock. And I will keep my testimony to the 2-minute timeline I thought that we had. For the record, my name is Jean Watson James. I've lived in Fairbanks since 1982. I'm a mother and a grandmother. I grew up during the time that abortions were illegal. It didn't stop them. It only made things worse for everyone. Lots of women were maimed and died. In countries with liberal abortion laws, easy access to birth control, and excellent sex education, actually had the lowest abortion rates and much lower than the United States. I strongly believe that the decision of a medical necessary abortion is a physician's decision and not the legislature. Unfortunately, events are never black and white, and this type of determination should be made by a medical doctor and not by a legislative mandate. Mandates can be misinterpreted. Circumstances can change with advances in medicine. And also, as people pointed out before, medical necessary is already defined as the physician's best practice. I find it really ironic that people who do not want the government in their lives in other areas can support this bill. So I urge you to oppose House Bill 173 and vote no. Instead, focus on options that reduce the number and need for abortions, such as improved access to birth control, excellent sex education that includes more than just abstinence. As we know, just abstinence doesn't work, although it's a good role model. And focus on the pressing issues that are very important to all Alaskans, our energy, our air pollution, and the economy and education. And just as a footnote, I'm the widow of a wonderful, fantastic man, William Bill H. James, M.D., who practiced pediatrics and family medicine in Alaska since 1959, both in private medicine and with the public health service. He had extensive experience working with all types of people. As a physician, he would have been very opposed to House Bill 173. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. And again, thank you for your patience in Fairbanks. We had quite a list here today. Carl Borich, also Fairbanks, and the last one in Fairbanks that I have today. Borich, is there, Borich?
I'm here.
Carl, if you would, your brevity would be appreciated because the time is clicking here, but if you have your testimony, please give it to us. Identify yourself first, please.
My name is Carl Borich. I'm a practicing obstetrician in Fairbanks, Alaska. I've lived in Fairbanks, Alaska all my life. And I've been a practicing obstetrician here for 16 years. I would like to urge a no vote on House Bill 173. I think that trying to define what constitutes a medical indication is a mistake and unnecessary. I agree with a lot of two speakers, and that it seems to me that we should be focusing on things that generate an improvement in overall health rather than trying to follow agendas of anti-abortion folk. I see that the House Bill 173 does not address fetal indications for medically indicated abortions. I think this is a serious flaw, and I think it just points out that there are many serious flaws when we try and define what constitutes a medical abortion. I think that people have to realize that a pregnancy itself can be a dangerous place to be. I have several high-risk pregnancies that are endangering the life of the mother. If we have a patient, for instance, with a lethal chromosomal abnormality, such as trisomy 18, we're forcing a woman to carry this pregnancy when it might endanger her life physically, but psychologically the damage can be also very great. Is it a boy? Is it a girl? What do you do? What are you going to name the baby? I think these are things we have to take into account, and I don't believe that it's possible truly to encompass all the indications for an abortion, and I think we would do better to focus on concrete things that can really help the state of Alaska and not on those anti-abortion rhetoric like the third speaker back. So that's my feeling again, no on House Bill 173. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you for taking time to call in. Last testimony of the day, Joyce Zunis.
Yes, Joyce Zunis, calling from Denver, Colorado. Though I haven't had the pleasure of visiting your state, I represent a speaker's bureau who, Eileen Smith, a particular speaker who has come into your state to share her story of losing her daughter to the experience of abortion during the procedure. Though I'm not here to share that story, I'm here to share my own. I am a gal between the ages of 15 and 26 who chose to exercise her personal freedom in care of my reproductive rights, which actually ended 7 pregnancies through medically necessary abortions. 2 of these pregnancies were state funded. Each abortionist told me the procedure was simple and that it would be over very quickly. I have to share, this was incorrect. The pain of losing a child to abortion and the regret for trusting in these abortion providers have not only altered my life personally for 36 years, but it's destroyed my marriage, my career, and denied my 5 living children their siblings. 11 years, 3 clinics, 2 states, 7 abortions. Not once was I told of the physical risk I would suffer, the necessity of bilateral mammograms, the fear of breast cancer, ovarian cysts, and being bedridden for 5 months in my last pregnancy and having to explain the possibility of me dying to my young children due to placenta previa, which is a very common health risk when women have multiple pregnancies. And in my case, it resulted in me losing all but 2 pints of blood and a partial hysterectomy at the delivery of my last child. Not once was I told of the emotional trauma I would suffer, anger, you know, flamed by betrayal and the system that we stand on, our American right to choose. I was never told I would feel like I was the only one kind of going crazy after my choices. Everyone talks about the right to choose, but no one talks about the choice. I will never forget hearing my first born's heartbeat instead of joy. I was in shock just as much as the nurses. Well, actually, I was more terrified that the nurses could see right through me and what I had done to my other children. I was never told you would need to grieve and cry for your unborn, that I chose to end their life through medically necessary abortions. I now know when you are forever a mom, regardless of the age of your children. I was a gal who was determined I would decide that date and time when I became mom. Well, today I know whether 6 seconds, 6 days, or 60 years old of a child that you would have, you are still mom. I ask that you support House Bill 173. There are many women in your state, like myself, who will seek that state-funded abortion and who will choose to use it as birth control. For myself, what I have learned is in pregnancy, you carry the baby for 9 months, but with abortion, you carry that sorrow and remorse for a lifetime. Abortion hurts everyone, family, friends, and future generations. Medically necessary abortions need to be defined. And I ask again that you do vote yes for House Bill 173 and protect lives of the unborn and the living in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce, for your testimony. That we're going to close public testimony now, and we can always reopen it. And Allison Curry has a response to Representative Gruenberg's question. I'm going to, Allison, I'm for Planned Parenthood. I'm going to ask you to bring that in writing to the committee, and we'll distribute it. And I'll ask again that we, we'll just see how it goes. As far as if there's a lot more testimony, we'll have to deal with that desire when we get together, but be prepared if we can to act on the bill if time will allow us to do that. What I want to do now is bring HB3 in front of us to introduce it. We aren't going to do much with the discussion today. I got to tell you that I'm again feel apologetic toward those that came to testify on HB3 and had to leave. I feel apologetic to Gail Fanumiai, the director, and staff for coming and sitting through the whole committee. Go ahead, introduce the bill for us. Sure. Representative Gruenberg has a comment.
For the record, we've had the new amendments prepared, the ones that have pen and ink that I've given out, and we're going to be giving them out to everybody now, just so you have them.
For that's for background, HB 173, that comment, and the committee has got that.
I'm going to do the introduction.
HB 3, Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing HB 3 after a long committee meeting. hearing another very, very important bill. just like it says on the sponsor statement on HB 3, voting is the foundation of a democratic republic. To strengthen and protect that foundation, voters must be who they say they are. That's what HB 3 is all about, and that's why this bill is so important. HB 3 simply requires photo ID before casting a ballot at the polling place. That's a proactive measure that helps guard against potential voter fraud. And one case of fraud is one case too many. Elections can be decided by only one vote, and close elections are common in Alaska. Somebody serving right now on the body who got his office originally by a toss of a coin. Photo ID is ubiquitous throughout Alaska and every place else. We need photo ID to buy booze, to enter a federal building at the airport, for banking operations, to drive our car, to get a passport, to buy cigarettes, for certain test taking, at some workplaces, to enter federal buildings, and much, much more. It's likely everybody in this room and everybody in this building has some form of photo ID. I know there's some who believe that photo ID to vote would be an unnecessary hassle. Well, let me explain what a hassle is. Some people in Iraq, after gaining their freedom from tyranny, risk their very lives and the lives of their families to vote. Terrorists had threatened death to anyone who voted, even to those who, voters who put ink on their fingers to prove they had voted, evidence that it had cost their lives. Now that, Mr. Chairman, is a hassle, to say the least. And photo ID to vote in Alaska doesn't even come close to anything like that. Nothing whatsoever in HB 3 prevents any Alaskan, either bush Alaskan or urban resident, from casting a vote if they're registered to vote and motivated to vote. They can show up at the polling place, identify themselves by 1, a photo ID, 2, 2 forms of non-photo ID, 3, be recognized by 2 election workers, 4, cast a provisional or question ballot. And is any of that too onerous for any Alaskan voter wherever they live? I would hope not. The aim, the only purpose of HB 3 is to provide a proactive means to better protect Alaska's voting process both now and in the future. And your support of HB 3 is respectfully requested. There's more, but we leave that to the next hearing.
Okay. Is everyone okay with holding questions off till the next hearing? That'd be great. Again, I thank you, the committee, for your indulgence. I owe you one. That was a bad setup today. I didn't expect quite as much testimony on HB 3. So with that, when we get back together on Wednesday, we'll start with HB 178, which is reclassifying certain drug offenses, and then we'll go to HGR 10, which is a constitutional amendment that has to do with the transportation fund. And then we will have a HGR, after HGR 10, we have a judicial council, or maybe before, but we'll have a judicial council confirmation. And then we'll get to 173.
This is Wednesday?
This is Wednesday. So with that, we're going to adjourn. And again, thank you for your patience and indulgence to the committee.